Last Sunday, we considered 1 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning with verse 12, and Paul's remarkable imagery of the church as the body of Christ. All those different parts of the body arguing together. Paul argues in that our goal is not to promote ourselves within this structure of the church over against others, but to recognize that though different, we all have a piece, a part to play in the strengthening, the building of the body of Christ for the sake of the mission. I told you that it is best that we not chop up Paul's message in these two chapters, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and chapter 13, but instead that we consider them to be an integrated effort to drive a message home to those of us who call ourselves Christ followers. Paul's message takes a remarkably poetic turn then in 1 Corinthians 13. I know of no other chapter in the Bible that is so well known. I also have come to rely upon this chapter more and more over and over again in my own ministry and in my own life. What is it that we are all about? I turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Here Paul expresses the profound nature of love that we are called to embody in our lives. Paul calls this love a still more excellent way. His message is deep and profound. It goes far beyond the trivial understanding of love put forth by the culture in which we live. The love that we are to share in this life, the love that we have been given in Jesus Christ, is our response to the love of God that we have experienced in Jesus the Christ. It is deep, and it lies at the very fabric of our being as Christian people. It is also a love that challenges us to move beyond simply loving those who love us. And as much as I love to read this chapter in the midst of a wedding ceremony, and even though it is appropriate in that time, I will tell you that Paul had no intention of limiting this concept of love to one particular individual in our lives, but saw this as our call to live in love beyond measure with all of God's creation. It calls us to live out love with everything we do and to wed that love with an ongoing effort to bring justice to the whole of God's people. To consider it in any other way is to trivialize this passage. Well, it is a message not easily learned. We are a people who would rather play in the shallows than swim in the deep. However, there are times in life when the lesson of love comes home to each of us in a powerful way, and we are changed forever. So today, I return to a true story of such a time in my life, one I have shared many times. The smell of new mown grass has made cutting my lawn an experience in personal time travel. I mow, and I remember an earlier time, and I remember the night when I learned about patient love. About the age of 12, I desired more spending money than a weekly allowance could muster. I wanted a job, but in my small town, those were hard to come by for one so young. So, in a great burst of what I have called entrepreneurial fervor, I went into business for myself, and I began to mow lawns. I put together quite an interesting clientele. It was composed mostly of widows and retirees who were looking for someone like me to do what they could no longer do for themselves. There was Mrs. Little and Miss Collier, who lived together about three blocks down Forest Street from our house. Mrs. Little was a retired second grade teacher who remembered me favorably from elementary school. Minda Crosby was one of my favorites. She lived in a large white Victorian house that featured a kind of tower at one corner and a wraparound porch. Her husband had been a cobbler. His shop was in a back portion of the house. I can still remember bringing shoes to him to be repaired. Mrs. Crosby, I never called her Minda to her face, kept a regular routine. She called almost exactly every 7 days to schedule another mowing of her grass. And while I worked, she busied herself in the kitchen, and every time when I finished mowing her lawn, she always offered me fresh baked oatmeal and raisin cookies and a cool glass of lemonade. Hard to appreciate those things on a cold January day, but in the middle of summer, they are a gift. I would sit in her kitchen at a white enamel and chrome table, my arms sweaty and flecked with grass, and while she searched for her purse, I ate and drank with pleasure. Another client was Bob Lamb. Mr. Lamb had been a town banker, been the town banker in Frankfurt. I enjoyed mowing his lawn, because in the garage behind his house, he kept an old Model T that he and a friend were restoring. And so I remember gazing through the window to assess their progress on that project. And I imagined the day when he would complete the project and offer me a ride in that old Model T. I never got it. I had to wait till last summer when Norm Budd gave me a ride in his Model T. So now, whenever I cut the grass, the aroma takes me back, and I think of all these people from my past. But more than any of these, I remember Mrs. Bingham. My buddies at school had warned me about Mrs. Bingham. Don't work for her, they cautioned. She'll talk your ear off. But one day she called, and I needed the work to pay for a new bike, and so I accepted. I arrived at her house with my lawnmower in tow. She came out into the yard and walked around with me to show me the boundaries and to warn me about the special areas she wanted attended to. She was a stately woman in her late 70s at that time. Her hair was pure white, swept neatly and elegantly up into a knot and held in place by a translucent brown comb. She seemed out of place, I thought, walking through the long, wet grass, and she made her steps unusually high, trying to avoid the damp. When she neared her cleanly groomed flower beds, she relaxed and spoke of them with a tone that could only be called reverent. She wore a gray skirt and a shirt waist blouse that came high upon her neck. It was trimmed with lace. She was the picture of elegance, I thought. I worked about an hour cutting her grass, and then I went to the door to be paid. She invited me inside and offered me a seat in a large old chair with white porcelain casters on each leg. I waited. It took her a long time to write that check. She sat across from me at a cherry wood secretary full of pigeonholes, stuffed with letters and stocked with pencils and stamps. And as she wrote, she began to speak. And she asked me about school and my family. Her questions seemed genuine, and she asked them in such a way that we were soon engaged in a conversation that lasted most of an hour. As time passed, I worked more and more for Mrs. Bingham. In the summer, I mowed her lawn. In the autumn, I raked her leaves. In the winter, I shoveled her walk. In the spring, I washed her windows and planted her flowers. Each time, after I finished, we would talk. We talked about growing up and my plans for the future. We talked about school and the prospect of college. I discovered that she was a Vassar girl. We talked about family. We talked about troubles. I soon realized that I cherished our conversations. She had become my friend. Well, I worked for Mrs. Bingham throughout high school. Even after I stopped mowing grass for Bob Lamb and Minda Crosby, I continued to cut Mrs. Bingham's grass. As I grew older, I felt a faint sense of embarrassment at our sessions together. How could I admit that this woman, so much older than me, could be my best friend? Still, I kept on visiting and we kept on talking. I invited her to my graduation reception at the house, not the party with my school friends, mind you, but the family reception with my aunts and uncles, the one where the decorations consisted of my graduation picture surrounded by glass bowls of mixed nuts and mints. She could not come. But I still have the gift that she sent. She gave me a copy of Markings by Dag Hammarskjöld. And she signed the note, Lillian. And I still have that note tucked within the cover of that book. Well, I went to see her before I left for college. I don't remember what we talked about, but I remember that I promised to visit again whenever I returned home. And I actually did visit her once or twice. But then, you know, I became a sophisticated college man, and I found it easy to avoid seeing her whenever I was home. After a while, I even stopped feeling guilty about it. I just ignored it. I graduated from college. I met Terry, and we married. And from time to time, the memory of Mrs. Bingham would come to my mind. The memory was both wonderful and painful. I knew that in growing up, I had walked away from someone very special. But I tried to put that out of my mind. Well, several years later, on a visit home to Frankfurt, Terry and I were in the local library when we met Mrs. Bingham's daughter. Hoping that she would not mention how long I had been silent regarding her mother, I inquired about Mrs. Bingham's health. It was all very adult, all very proper. But there was a child in me screaming and looking for a place in which to hide. Well, she's not well, came the reply. She's been in the hospital for some time now. She still mentions you. She thought so much of you. The past tense in her voice felt like a razor strap across my behind. I would love to see her. We will go tonight to the hospital during visiting hours. So Terry and I went. Terry went with me but stood back at the door of the hospital room, and I entered her room. Mrs. Bingham lay asleep. She was shockingly thin. Her hair hung straight to her shoulders and appeared a faint yellow now in the fluorescent light. I approached her bed. I touched her hand, and I softly spoke her name. Mrs. Bingham. Mrs. Bingham. Remember me? She opened her eyes without moving her head, and she held me in her gaze. Oh, she whispered in a faint signal of recognition. And with her hand, she pulled me weakly toward her. I bent my head and turned my ear to her lips. You're here. You're here. Thank you. Then she spoke the truth. I had always known, but had been unable to accept. I always loved you, she said. And she kissed my cheek. I know, I replied. I loved you too. So now, in that season, I mow the lawn, and I smell the grass, and I pause as Mrs. Little, Miss Collier, and Minda Crosby and Bob Lamb all pass before me. But mostly, I remember Lillian Bingham. And the night I learned that love is patient. Very, very patient. Thanks be to God.